And yeah, let's not give a long introduction. But Diabia, I have a few people in my life. When I think Peter, I think that's it. Not just because of the red beard. We all know that Peter had a red beard. I mean, it's clear. I mean, he's his whole personality. There's nothing else that he could have. But the whole passion. So anyway, but this is one of those moments, and I thought it applies so beautifully to where you are as a congregation, to what we're doing here today. So I'm going to be brief, and but I want you to see something, and I want you to feel the invitation that God is extending to us, to you today. So Matthew chapter 14, immediately after this, after what? So this is a while into Jesus' ministry. The disciples have been walking with him for quite some time. And immediately after this, immediately after, so John chapter 14 starts with John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, who has been imprisoned and beheaded for his bold provocation that God reigns, the gospel, proclaiming the gospel, and then challenging Herod for his godlessness, for his immorality, his lack of fear of God in taking his brother Philip's wife and marrying her. So the adultery that's happening in the plain view of everyone, he calls them out, and his wife was really angry, and she asked for his head through the daughter, and he was beheaded. And Jesus was sad. This is, I mean, he's his cousin. It was a time that they spent together. He is the one who called out Jesus, the Lamb of God, who recognized the Messiahship of Jesus more first before anyone else. So it's his cousin, and it's his friend, and it's a partner. The two of them ministered together. They baptized together. They did stuff together. And Jesus wants to escape the crowd, and he goes away. And he jumps on the boat, sails a while, just escapes the crowd, and then he hides in the mountains, in the Platteland Wiki. But he was discovered. Someone shared on Instagram, look, Jesus is here. There's a photo, and the crowds came. You know, the kombis, the surfboards, everyone came to Jesus. And there was masses of people were there. And Jesus spent lots of time ministering, and after a whole day, people were hungry. And Jesus thought, this is the opportunity. He recognizes what God is doing. So he says, who's got something? And you know, the multiplying of the bread to feed 5,000 men with their wives and children, masses. And he does a miracle, but the people weren't dumb who were there. They recognized what Jesus is doing, because one or two people already said that, I think he's the Messiah. I think, I mean, it's been building for a while. He's the Messiah. See, he opens blind eyes. He heals the lame. He raises the dead just a while ago in Capernaum. He's been doing lots of miracles. And the sign is a sign, because 12 baskets of bread was left over, sufficient to solve all the needs of Israel. That's a sign. And they will recognize the 12 baskets. And then Jesus, immediately after this, Jesus says, we got to cross over. Can't stay here. I know you want to make me king now. I know that you want to do this. This is all the signs of the Messiah has been fulfilled, but just before you do this. And he sent his disciples. He said immediately after this, Jesus insisted, I love this, insisted that disciples get back into the boat and cross over to the other side. What's on the other side? The Gadarenes, the heathens, those barbaric people, those people who were not like us, the Jews. These aren't good Jews. These were Galilean Jews. Yeah? Lekker mense. Fresh start Christene. Nee, joke. So grappie. But you know, this is not the synagogue people. This is lekker mense. And he said, but they at least better than those people over there, those barbarians, those heathens, you know, who offer their children, who have these festivals, who cut themselves, you know, who do these things. He said, get over and cross to the other side of the lake. While he sent everyone home, he dismissed them. And after sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there. Let's look at the intentional chronological words here. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from the land. These fishermen knew that, oops, there's a problem. For a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock, so this is a while, about 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them, strolling on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "Ah, it's a ghost!" It's dramatic, eh? If you haven't learned anything, this is entertaining. But Jesus spoke to them at once, and he said, "Don't be afraid." And he said, "Take courage, I am here." And then Peter called out to him, saying, "Lord, if it's really you, then calm the storm." Yeah, no. No. I would have said that. I mean, my life philosophy is no pain, no pain. I would have said that. I said, if it's really you, then make everything better. Remember, this is the second storm. There was a storm before that. This is the second storm. There was a storm while Jesus was chilling in the boat, sleeping in the boat. And Jesus was having the best dream of his life. He thought he was at the Valley of the Waves or something in his dream. And they woke up Jesus also in the middle of the night, also freaking out because we're going to drown. And then they said, "Don't you care that we die? Calm the storm." And Jesus said, "Ach, you little faith ones, you little faith ones." And then he says, "Winds, calm down, waves, chill, super calm, great calm." And then they said, "Who is this man? Who even the wind and the waves obey? Who is this man?" They were discovering the identity of Jesus. They're discovering who this man is, and they freaked out that the wind and the waves obey him. They were about to die, but he didn't seem intimidated at all. But this time, Peter discerns something in Jesus' invitation. He discerns something of Jesus' invitation, yeah? He said, "If it's really you, I want to share in your peace. If it's really you, I want to share in this faith. If it's really you, let me walk with you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come on." And then Peter probably did a backflip, shouted kayabanga, and landed on his feet, because Peter can't do anything normal. Anyway, so Peter went over to the side of the boat and he walked on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, when he focused his attention on that which is too big for me, he was terrified and began to sink. And he cried out, saying, "Save, Lord." Immediately, Jesus reached out, grabbed him, and said, "Hey, Peter, you still have so little faith. Why do you doubt me?" And when they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. The disciples worshipped him and said, "You really are the Son of God. You really are the Son of God." Previous storm, "Who is this man?" This storm, "You really are the Son of God." I want to look to 3 or 4 things in this text that applies to you, that you've been participating in, that you've been enacting in so many ways in the last few weeks in your church. First one, I told you this is a pivotal moment in the discipleship journey because Jesus' ministry has predominantly been in Galilee, where he grew up. Capernaum is where Levi was a tax collector there. Simon, Peter, Andrew, John, all of them come from there. Quite a few of them lived there. They grew up there. This is their valley. This is their space. This is their home. Capernaum was the base place of Jesus' ministry, came in and out of there, probably because of some of them. Peter's family might have stayed there. I don't know if his wife and his children joined him on ministry or whether they stayed there, but they returned there the whole time. They lived there. They rested there. This was their base. So Jesus' ministry was in and around Capernaum in the north of the country. They went to Jerusalem to the feasts. They did cross over once before the previous storm. He's hinting at something that they have to catch. When they delivered the Gadarean man and then came back and raised Jairus' daughter from the grave. So their ministry has been there. But the point is that in Galilee and in the eyes of his disciples, they started recognizing that Jesus really is the long-awaited Messiah, the one who will reign like King David, who will restore God's reign. John the Baptist has been shouting at God is reigning. Although Caesar claims God is reigning, God is in control. He's been shouting it the whole time. And people starting to get it because of his miracles and because of his faith. But with the multiplication of the bread, something happened. It was that click. Because when the Messiah reigns, he will restore plenty. He will restore sufficiency. The fields will have an abundance. It was a sign. And so immediately after that, he said, I want you to see something about me. You want me to be the king of the Jews. You want me to fight Herod. You want me to be the Messiah that just fixes all Israel's problem. He said, something more, something that you're missing. I want you to come with me over to the other side. Go to the other side. Go to them. Go to those people on that side. Jump in the boat. Go that side. You know, yes, we are famous here. Yes, mega church is happening right here in the valley. Yes, bread sufficient, but go over to the other side. And as they go over to the other side, what you can't read now is in chapter 15. So Jesus goes that side. He again delivers, he heals, he restores. And then he multiplies bread on that side, chapter 15, verse 32, again, saying, and there, 7 baskets remain. He's not just the God of the 12 tribes of Israel. He's the God of the 7 nations, sons of Noah. 7, the fullness of the tribes of the world, the fullness of the nations of the world. I'm not just the Messiah of these people. I want you to see that I'm the Messiah of everyone. I'm not just the God of those people in Shofar, Cape Town. I'm not just the God of Cape Town. I'm not just the God who wants to bless and bring prosperity and peace here. I'm not the God who only wants to heal your children and your mother-in-law when she's in trouble and cast out demons of the people that come into your house. I always thought, I mean, like, ek sou Petrus gewees het, nee? Petrus, like, Jesus, you have to come back. All the demon-possessed people are in my house. And Jesus, like, no, I didn't just come for them. Didn't come for healthy people. I came for all the sick people. And then he's like, but there's still demon-possessed people in my house. Can we just stop on the way there? Anyway. But Jesus' ministry really is this one thing. He wants them to see that I'm not just the Messiah for these people, for you and for your home. I didn't just come for you. I came for all the sick. I came for all the nations. That the nations may bow. That every tribe and every tongue and every people may bow down. That's the issue. So as he's crossing over from the one side to the other side, there is this big storm in the middle of the ocean. You have to say again, because it's again. Because the previous, anyway, again. There's this big storm in the middle. A storm that is too big for the disciples to handle. It's too big for these very reputable fishermen, experienced fishermen. They can't handle this one. It's too big for them. All their skills and all their learning, all their experience, it's too big for them. They have to cry out. They have to look to Jesus. But in the middle of this whole storm, they see where they fear they are going to die. You can say again, yeah? Jesus, thank you. Jesus walks up to them. And the contrast can't be better, no? Can't be better. It's this massive storm. They are fearing for their lives. They've been fighting the storm all night long. Nee, julle aand lank. And then Jesus walks up. Jesus, the contrast is, Jesus is very comfortable, as previously, very comfortable in the storm. He's not thrown in the storm. He's not worried in the storm. His heart isn't racing. He's not running, he's not fighting, he's not swimming, he's strolling in the storm, on the waves. He's not intimidated. So I want you to see a picture, because this will help you understand. The next slide, please. Very romantic contrast here. Anyway, but there is this massive storm. For the ancient, and you can see it in all the ancient maps, and still in your contemporary movies of your pirate movies, né, for your children. The storms were always filled with evil. The seas, The seas were mysterious and evil because they couldn't dive with diving glasses or cameras and lights. So for them, the storms and the seas were always filled with all kinds of evil, and specifically Leviathan. This is the one thing that we read in the Bible over and over again in all the poetic books. We read about this sea monster, and this is a picture. It's a mysterious figure. It's not a literal thing. It's a mysterious figure that represents the evil and the chaos in this world. That which is uncontrollable, that which is hidden, that which is dark. So it's a representation. You'll see it features in all the apocalyptic books in the Bible as well. If you read Revelation, and if you read Daniel, and if you read Ezekiel, you see the same figure, the same images there, the seas. And from Jesus' perspective, Revelation chapter 4, the seas are crystal clear like glass. From his perspective, he's not intimidated. From his perspective, everything is in order and everything is calm. But the issue is the storms and the seas represent that which represents all the chaos and all the evil that spills over the world. Spills over the world. It's a picture of sin in the world. It's a picture of chaos. It's a picture of evil ruling the world. And Jesus sends his disciples to go to the other side, into this world that is overrun with evil and chaos. Overrun with evil and chaos. To leave this little huddle of their familiar culture where they've met Jesus, and when Jesus really systematically heals, teaches, restores relationships, everything, he brings shalom. He brings peace. He's the Prince of Peace. He brings peace. And their lives are increasingly filled with peace. They and their neighbors get to know Jesus, his teachings, his life, and his miracles, and their lives are restored. It's going well with them. It's always some issue because of some Roman official or because your mother-in-law or whatever has an issue. But the point is their lives are increasingly filled with peace. And Jesus tells them, I know that you know who I am, but you don't fully know who I am. You want me to be your domestic God in this space for here. But I am much more, and I want you to discover it. So I want you to embrace my invitation to go over into the other side, to recognize and to meet me there. It's a beautiful picture. The scripture says so, that the Son of Man didn't come for anything else but to destroy the works of the devil. So I want you to see some things here, and then something that I think you're already grasping what the invitation is. The invitation to the disciples was, now that you know who I am, now that you've seen what I can do, now that you can see my power, my glory, I want you to more fully know who I am. I want you to follow me over into the other side, away from that which is familiar and safe, that where you've seen my glory and my sufficiency. If you follow me, you will go even over to the other side. But for that, you'll have to enter into the storm. You'll have to learn. In the first storm, you recognize that I am the God who can still, who is this man? The wind and the waves obey him. He really is almighty. He's really got authority over all the elements. And the second storm, the invitation wasn't for Jesus to come and make peace in the storm externally. His invitation is, walk with me in the water. Can you share in my peace, although the wind and the waves are moving below your feet? In the first storm, the invitation is, can you see that I have authority over the storm? And the second time, can you share in my peace amidst the storm? Can you share in my peace amidst the storm? And Peter sends that. Peter sends Jesus' invitation was not to make everything around me like it was before, to fix my problems. The invitation was, can you share in my peace amidst the storm? Can you share that? And I tell you, that's one of the most difficult things to learn. But Jesus had to teach them that, because he's saying, you're going from a place which is relative peace now, but you're going to walk into a culture and into the world really overrun with evil, a place where you have no authority and no power, apart from what I share with you, a place where you don't call the shots, a place where things don't work as it used to work. It's really different. It's a world overrun with evil and chaos. The invitation is, before you come here, I want you to learn to embrace my peace in the storm. I want you to see that I'm the God who can really hold you in this. Keep your eyes focused on me, and you will be able to walk in this. You will not be killed. Even though you go through the fire, you will not be consumed. When you go into the water, it won't consume you. No? Beautiful invitation. Peter got that. So the invitation for us really is this. Koenie Burger, ek sê altyd verkeerd, Koenie de Villiers het gesing Rykie Katbos in Kabroe, né? Maar Koenie Burger was the moderator of the Dutch Reformed Church for many years. Actually, just for one long period, but it was post-apartheid. And it was not post-apartheid, post-first national democratic election, post-94. And it was not a popular time to become the head of the Dutch Reformed Church, you know, because everything about apartheid has been associated as being supported and even propagated even through the Dutch Reformed Church up until that point. And now we are post-election, and things the chessboard has changed, the power has changed, everything has changed. In that time, Koenie Burger is invited to become the Dutch. No one wanted that baton, no one. But he got the baton of the Dutch Reformed Church. So for a number of years, it was just vier het doodblaas inside the church and outside the church, you know. Just keep it all together, just help, and saying sorry a lot, you know. Storms, chaos the whole time. So for that whole, his whole period, his whole session as being the moderator was just chaos for him. And he just felt like this being thrown around the whole time. So eventually when his period came to the end, he handed over the baton. And he said, the Lord bless you and keep you far away. And he just walked out, no? He's saying, I want to return to do real ministry, like what he found real ministry. And then in Gordon's Bay and in Khayelitsha, he says, let me just continue ministry. You do the political stuff. It's not a month, and he gets a 911 call. We need you now. There's a year. We need you now. You must come and help here now. And he knows that he has to go. And he jumps in the car, and as he's driving Gordon's Bay to Stellenberg, he drives in the car, and he just phones. He phones Jesus. He prays. He prays to Jesus. And he says, God, I'm so tired of the storms. I'm so tired of another crisis, of another thing. And he says, I just want to continue and do real ministry, like his thing. And then Jesus was in his car, and Jesus said to him, Koenie, if you follow me, you will always walk into the storm because I've come to bring peace where there is no peace. And I just love that. I just love that. I just love that. And so he said, okay. But I love this simple truth that is illustrated in this powerful scene with Peter. We want Jesus to make our lives better because then things feel better. But if we follow Jesus, when we follow Jesus, we will always walk and he will always lead us into a storm. He didn't come for the healthy, he came for the sick. He will always go into the storm. So everything that we saw here this morning with Debbie and Ronel saying we're handing over to go into the nations, to cross the oceans, to enter the storm, that the nations may be glad, no? And you're going to Gitega because it's lucky in Cape Town, much luckier than Gitega. That's why all the Burundis are in Cape Town, no? But while they're coming this way, the salmon swim upstream. And we go there. And we say, Jesus, we're going to enter the chaos and enter the storm, a world overrun by evil, because we know that when we follow you, you will bring peace. You will bring shalom. That's what you do. You've come not as the Messiah of Cape Town, but the Messiah of the nations. And the same for Jacques and Ita, who are very comfortable in their work. We're saying, we are comfortable enough to follow Jesus into the discomfort and into the chaos of other people's lives, other families, other things, because where Jesus goes, he brings peace, and I want to be with him in that. We are not the peacemakers. We are simply the witnesses of ones who have tasted and seen that the Lord is good. And it's such a beautiful. So when we take communion, Jacques will lead us now. I want you to remember that Jesus' body was not just broken for me, for my healing. We thank God, and that's the anchor of our foundation. A life made whole and being made whole because of his brokenness. But he broke it for the nations. And it's his blood that was shed for the forgiveness, the remission of my sins. But he's the lamb who was slain for the sins of the world. So it's just a powerful reminder. So I just want to honor you for what you're doing and how you follow Jesus. I want to say that you really are a congregation that really follows Jesus. And I want to honor you for that. Amen.
Man, can we give Ross a clap just for that? Thank you, Ross. And if I can just ask those who's dealing with the elements, can just get that ready to hand this.